This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right. Thanks for joining us. Coming up this hour, Connor O'Gara, Saturday Down South, will join us. We'll talk about Mike Leach and his impact in the Mississippi State. It far reaches that, though. It goes to Texas Tech. It goes to Washington State. We've been spending this morning talking about his legacy as a football coach and a personality. We'll get into the NFL as we head into week number, what are we at, 15 now? Is that where we're at? Jeez, my goodness, it goes by quick. But the NBA is rolling along, and I know many people are still thinking that it's, you know, we're still a ways to go before we reach the halfway point and whatnot, and standings are going to change. Last night, Golden State played Milwaukee, and the Bucks won at home, beating the Warriors, and Golden State sitting at 14-14. They are 10th in the Western Conference. And this is one of the reasons I think people don't get all worked up about where teams are in the standings. It's easy to be excited if you're a New Orleans Pelicans fan, because Zion Williamson is playing really well, and the team is playing really well around him, and they are right now, they're tied with Memphis for the best record in the West, and the Celtics are really cruising. They have the best record in the NBA. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are putting up, they're the two leading scorers on this team. They just got done a road trip. They're 22-7. But when you talk about a team like Golden State, I think this is why people don't get worked up, because if they're healthy, they'll just turn it on at a point, and they'll still be the favorites to win the Western Conference. That there is a hangover that happens to teams when they win a championship and they go into the drudgery of the regular season. The action isn't in the regular season. And when you're talking about stars that are accustomed to getting to the playoffs, you can go through a lull. We see it in all sports, where the regular season just becomes rather mundane. It doesn't mean that they're giving up games. It doesn't mean they're not playing hard. It just means, like, it's just not a sense of urgency that you get when the excitement of the postseason comes. And I think that is something that happens all the time. You talk about a Kansas City Chiefs team, for example, sometimes will go through a struggle where they'll lose 2 out of 3 games or 3 out of 5 games, and everybody wants to know what's wrong. What's wrong? You know what's wrong is that what the high that they got from making a deep playoff run, maybe even going to a Super Bowl or even winning a Super Bowl, just isn't matched when you have a Week 7 matchup with the Jacksonville Jaguars. The same thing with Golden State. The idea of getting in a series, a 7-game series, and analyzing that series, for these guys, that's where the money is made. That's where the excitement comes. And they're done rolling through a regular season.
SportsNet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, again, Connor O'Gara, Saturday Down South, set to join us in about a half an hour. And we'll talk to him about Mike Leach, who passed away yesterday at the age of 61. Actually, Monday night, officially. But we had the news early Tuesday. It came out Tuesday. At Total Wine & More, save big on what you love this December with hundreds of deals on amazing wines and spirits. Get up to 35% off over 200 different wines and spirits, which is surprising because they really have the lowest prices in town. You can check their website. There's just so many great things to choose from. I mean, whatever selections you're looking for, bourbon, cab, craft beers, etc., the prices are so low. And, oh, by the way, the staff is really friendly and knowledgeable. So even if you kind of looking for something, you kind of know what you want, but you don't really know what you want, they're always around to help you find the best bottle at the lowest price. Again, Total Wine & More. Love what you find at the lowest prices only at Total Wine & More. Drink responsibly. Be 21. All right. So, real quick, World Cup. You're rooting for France today or for Morocco? What's the World Cup situation in Qatar today?
No, it's got to be France.
Right. They're the defending champs, right?
They're defending cup champs, so that doesn't matter as much when it comes to, you know, because it's every 4 years, so it's hard to say, though they are defending champs, teams change a lot in 4 years. I just think Argentina versus France will be an epic final versus Argentina versus Morocco.
But didn't France win this too, like in 06 or something like that? 98.
98.
Yeah. Okay. So 98, 0. 2018
and then 2018.
All right. So if they're in the finals again, what are they doing right there? What's their system?
Just the players that are coming up.
That's it?
I mean, they're being blessed with skilled player after skilled player after skilled player.
So there's not a coaching, like forget us for a second. Like if you're England and you're an English fan, you go, wait a minute, hold on one second. We don't even make the finals. What are they doing that's different from us? And there's nothing more than, sorry, just have the players.
Well, a lot of people thought this was.
There's not a development program. There's not a coach. There's not a
system. I mean, no, it is a development.
There you go.
Say it's the coach,
I'm breaking the layers of the onion now. All right, yeah, so now we got to this.
I can't say it's the coach.
Okay.
Because the
coaches change.
They change too often. And like I said, it's every 4 years. The players, like this, the England team this year, a lot of them were on the team last time. A lot of them were on the team 4 years ago, and a lot of them, most of this team were in the Euros in 2020.
Gotcha. Okay.
Well, it's the 2020 Euros played in 2021 because of COVID. And so a lot of those guys were on this team. So, you know, there's a familiarity. That's what you really need in this. I mean, all these guys are skilled players, obviously. There's a familiarity that you need.
How much of this is really luck? I mean, it's a one-shot deal. It's not a best-of-seven series where you eventually root out the better teams. I mean, some of it is just, yeah, we got a bounce here or there, and we won 1-0. And we get to go, and they don't.
Hey, listen, talk to Morocco.
Yeah.
I don't want to cheapen Morocco's accomplishments because they have not been scored on in this tournament. And so there is something to say about
that. That's kind of neat.
But every single one of their games has been like 1-0 or 0-0. You know, I mean, they tied Spain. I believe they tied Spain, but went to the penalty shootouts. And those obviously don't count towards the goal scored. So, I mean, it's just they've been on this magical run. But in terms of a final, I think the bigger draw, the more enticing matchup would be watching Argentina take on France.
Yeah, got it. So, yeah, I watched the Argentina match. I didn't watch all of it. There was a point where they were up, and I was like, yeah, okay, I'll go do something else. But, man, I'm telling you, it's at that point where even if without the United States in it, it's still really thrilling. So I'll
it
be
is.
Watching this afternoon.
And, you know, a lot of people are pointing to, Argentina's having, like, that Spain type of run. When Spain won in 2010 – they lost their opening match, and everyone kind of said, well, same old Spain, because Spain has been notorious for losing in the group stage, being one of the top teams, but always losing in the group stage. And, you know, they lost their first game in 2010, but then won all the rest of them.
Wow.
And so a lot of people were thinking Argentina was going to do the same, or Argentina's on that kind of same path.
Gosh. So, all right. Well, when's the final? Saturday?
Final Sunday.
Sunday. Okay.
There is a third place game, if you care. Which would be Croatia versus the loser of France, Morocco. That'll take place on Saturday.
We don't do that here with our sports. We don't have like a runner-up game.
Did we used to with March Madness?
I think the NCAA tournament used to have it. Yeah, they just went. Yeah, no, we'll stop that.
We're done.
Yeah, we're done. But is there the consolation game? Do you get money for winning to get third? Is it just pride, or is there something to actually play for third place in this thing?
You know, I'm not sure.
So
I mean, it just, you know, kind of sorts out the top four.
Might as well throw you out there on the pitch for a consolation game.
I mean, technically, that's the United States' best finish is third place in a World Cup.
Oh, okay. When was that?
1950.
50, okay.
Yeah, a lot of the European teams didn't make the trip over down to South America.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
It was 1950. They had to go by boat.
Now, do you get medals? Like, is there a bronze medal, so to speak?
Third place game. I don't know what they do. I know for first and second. You know, after the game is over, second place team or the loser of that game, they'll go up and they'll collect their medals.
Yeah.
The first place, the winners of the game, will kind of create like a little tunnel. You know, they'll stand on each side of them and congratulate them, and they'll go up and they grab their medals and the losers of the game, they're always so excited. They just kind of get their medal, walk off stage, and go immediately into the tunnel. They're like not having any of it. Then the winners of the World Cup, obviously, they get a medal, but then they get the trophy.
Okay.
So everyone gets a medal. One person, you know, one team gets a trophy.
France and Morocco today. So there you go.
Yeah. I mean, I'm curious. I mean, my personal feeling would be that France should wipe the floor of Morocco. It should be a blowout.
Yeah.
But then again, I mean, this Morocco team, I think, you know, I mean, they're a true Cinderella.
That's great. So, yeah, we'll watch that today. There is news. Grant Wall, who passed away, the sports writer, a burst blood vessel is what they're saying now is how he died. So all of that early sort of conspiratorial talk is now dead. So he wasn't poisoned or anything like that. So it man, was that fascinating Friday night, though, with how many people that were like, even I was like, all right, this is fishy, really, really fishy. But just died of a busted blood vessel. So that's really sad. But imagine the flight over to Qatar to get your brother or loved one. Like, it's got to be just heartbreaking to fly that far around the world to identify and claim the body of your brother, mother, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Whoever it is.
This one they probably didn't have to claim. They probably waited at the airport. Because, I mean,
I don't know how the process works.
Yeah.
How do you do that in Qatar?
Well, I think
Are we just assuming there's an embassy there? Yeah, I'm just assuming.
Maybe they just go and grab them and say, you know, we'll put them on this plane.
I've never claimed a body overseas. So
I don't.
But I'm just, I mean, it's easy to just go, just assume, but
now, are we sure that it, you know, the pop blood vessel wasn't tampered?
Can you do that? Like, can you orchestrate that?
I've seen it in James Bond movies.
Right, I guess. No, you know, it really, look, I'm not a conspiratorial guy at all. I'm not. I really find.
Except for the frozen envelope.
Yeah. And I told you, I bought the Michael Jordan suspended story for a long time.
Still kind of do.
I still kind of do. But this one, when I got the news, my first reaction was something fishy. That was my first thing was like, This is one of the highest profile, outspoken media guys covering the World Cup. This is a guy that went in with a rainbow shirt, got detained, had to get permission to get back in, wrote scathing things on his blog about the country and the treatment of the workers who built the stadiums and why were they there in the first place. It was a pain in the rear to the country that was trying to celebrate itself and the World Cup. This was the guy that had a huge following, not only in the United States, but was a respected journalist around the world. He was and just ripping the country to shreds. And then he's dead at 48 years old, just dead. And you go, wait, since I don't know how he died, it's got to be something fishy. And it ended up being a blood vessel, but his brother didn't add any, you know, didn't calm the waters of the conspiratorial talk.
No, not at all.
The first thing his brother does is when he finds out his brother died is throw out that he was killed, that he was murdered. Just saying, you know, he's a healthy guy. It shouldn't have happened. He was murdered, you know, just throwing it out there, just without any evidence, just throwing it out there. And I should not have gobbled that up, but I kind of gobbled that up for a while. There seems I'm connecting the dots and it fit like, but then we talked about this on Monday. If let's say you're the Qatari government, that's the last thing you need is just survive it. Survive the criticism, survive everybody because they go away after Sunday's
Sochi Olympics,
right? Exactly. You just let them come, let them write about how we don't care about the dead workers who built these stadiums and this is all blood oil money and whatever it is, right? Let them write it. You survive it. And then you, the only thing coming out of the World Cup when it's all said and done is the celebration of whoever was the champion. And then we move on in 4 years to the North American,
the rising star of the, you know,
exactly.
Soccer-related things. And then we'll just go back to thinking Qatar is that weird country that makes their own islands and has an indoor ski arena.
Exactly. And that's how you do it. So what is the last thing you want? A suspicious death of the reporter that's writing critical articles about you. Like that you don't want.
Oh, so, I remember all the criticism with the Sochi Olympic Games.
Yeah,
remember,
all of it.
Just all of that. And then, I mean, I frankly don't remember anything.
Don't remember much
there,
about that after that. Right?
You know, all I remember is that there's a town in Russia called Sochi.
That's right.
That's a summer town. The Winter Olympics.
That's when I started to slow down on that conspiratorial talk. I'm like, well, what is the end game of this, right? Like, what if you're Qatar and you're sitting around going, oh, I'm going to what would you rather have? Just survive it for another week. And then it's over and no one's talking about it anymore. Or you create something that's got lingering effects. Like if they did the autopsy and they found out it was poison or something, this lasts forever, right? This is something that will always stain your country. So you just let it go. You just survive it. But as sad as it sounds, because we are talking about a really great journalist that died. This is not a movie. This is real life, real families that were affected. It was juicy enough on Friday to go, oh, there's got to be more to this than a 48-year-old just collapsing and dying at the World Cup. He had bronchitis. He never slept. He didn't rest. He didn't, you know, all of those things. And, you know, maybe that had a factor. I don't know. Or maybe it was just something that was something was going to happen no matter if he was in Qatar or at his home in the United States. No idea. But that it's sort of now done. So, and you know what? His brother got a few people saying to him, are you going to apologize now? Are you going to now? But, you know, let him grieve. Yeah, it was, that's just an emotional time. You know, why do we expect people who are grieving to be rational about right. anything? Like, why do we expect, like, you know what I mean? Like if you're like, let's say, you know, you have a loved one that dies in an accident and then you go, my sister died in a car accident. We should just ban cars, you know? And somebody goes, that's insane. Well, yeah, they're just going through something really, really traumatic. They're going to say things that are just they're not stopping to process the conversation. And I'm sure that's what his brother, I think his brother's name's Eric. I'm sure that's what his brother did. He just, the emotion and the grief overwhelmed him. And it did feel suspicious. It did feel like there were dots to connect. And he connected them, and now you unconnect them. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's again. Connor O'Gara joining us in 15 minutes to talk about Mike Leach. And not only his effect in football, but SEC football as the coach of Mississippi State. We continue on Wake Up Call.
With Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue along on Wake Up Call. Connor O'Gara, Saturday Down South in 10 minutes on Mike Leach and the sad passing. Man, that really was sad. The more I think about it. We got another clip of Mike Leach. This actually involves Connor O'Gara. What was this about? Netflix? Did
yes.
Connor O'Gara ask him about Netflix, or did this just
no,
come
Connor
organically?
Connor O'Gara asked him.
Well done. Here is Mike Leach, the late, great Mike Leach, talking about Netflix, which was prompted by our Connor O'Gara, our guest, coming up in the next segment.
Sankey said that you have some Netflix recommendations. Would you be willing to share those with us?
Yeah. I wish I'd watched more Netflix lately. And I haven't. Somebody said I need to watch The Terminal List, which I haven't watched it yet. The Hidden Gem, which I think I said it last year, Operation Odessa, that documentary, you need to watch that, about these international criminals that try to buy a submarine for Pablo Escobar. That's worth watching. I wish I could tell you I'd watch more Netflix. I haven't watched a lot lately. And during the season, it's good to watch, to kind of get your head straight. But I did. I'm up to date on Better Call Saul. I'm up to date on Yellowstone. I'll tell you, that's part of it. The kids got me into Stranger Things, and I'm certainly not ready for this season. I'm about halfway through. I don't know. So if you guys have any good recommendations, I could probably use them. I guess I'll defer to the numbers here.
What football guy coach on the college level, or even the NFL level, but on the college level, would ever admit to watching that much television?
None.
None. There's not one football guy that would go, I'm caught up on Yellowstone. I'm caught up on Better Call Saul.
You might have football guy go, yeah, I caught 10 minutes of that new hit show in between films.
Yeah, exactly.
In between watching film.
What's that thing? Things That Are Strange? Was that the thing the kids are watching?
Yeah.
Things That Are
Strange. I don't have time for that.
I don't have time for that. Better Call who? What are you talking about?
Better Call
what
Paul?
What is this stuff?
Is that what we're talking about? Better Call Paul?
Yeah, it goes back to what we've always kidded with Bill Belichick, right? Yeah, InstaFace. What is why these kids on Snapbook? Oh, I don't know what this stuff is. Email. What does E stand for? What is that? Yeah, stop it. Stop it. Just stop it. It's nonsense. It's absolute, utter nonsense. It is. Never believe one guy that ever tells you. Like, it's like being like, I swear to God, it's like, what's that thing you put on the wound on your hand? It's like a aid band thing. What is that? Like Facebook is so now.
Concert? What?
Right. It's so permeated life that even if you're not on it, you know what it is. Well, like the idea that you're so caught up in something, you don't even, like, face chat? I don't even know what that is. Like, stop it.
See,
like,
I love the honesty, though. Where he was like, he's like, you know, I'm not watching as much as I would like to.
Right.
You know, I wish I could get into some more. I am caught up on this. I'm caught up on that. And it's like, yeah, you should. I mean, yeah,
right?
I'd much rather have you just be honest and I believe that than believing anyone is ever sitting there like, you know, I'm coaching 10, 12 hour days. And then when I come home, I'm studying film for another 8.
Yep, exactly. I take the work home. Yeah. My wife has to make me a dinner and I have to eat it in the film room. I don't, you know, last night I got 45 minutes of good sleep.
Yep.
In between breaking down defensive. Like that guy, here's Mike Leach, like just shutting all that down. Like, dude, I've got free time and I'm not caught up on Yellowstone.
Oh, God.
Like, you know what I mean?
Not even close.
Like, golly, that guy, right? It's just, like that. That right there is why he's a refreshing. He was refreshing.
And if I'm a head coach, I'm kind of mad at Mike Leach for saying something like that.
Yeah.
Because it's like, all right, you know, you're a success. What are you doing different?
Right. Exactly.
And if I, you know, all of a sudden I'm looking inward, you know, or I'm looking at this guy's like, wow, if he has to work 18, 20 hours a day and he's getting the same record as this guy, you know, what's going on here?
Yeah. Like what is in the end, like all of these coaches burning themselves out at young ages, like, do they, when they look back, do they attribute their success to that? Or do they attribute their success from working smarter, like putting in the hours? Yeah. But finding the right, like using that time wisely, finding the right recruits, finding the right system, finding the right assistant coaches. Like, do you think any of them ever say the only reason we won a national championship is because I went into the office every day at 4 a.m. and didn't leave until 2 a.m. Right? Like, is that the recipe for success? Or is the recipe for success recruiting and selling your program to the right people? And that doesn't take 17, 20 hours a day. Like, in the end, that's where you get success in this sport, right? And I think Leach was like, I know the players that are going to come here are going to, I'm not a secret. You come to Mississippi State because we throw the ball 60 times a game. Like, there's no secret to that. You come to play for me, and this is who I am, and this is what it is, and this is Starkville, and like, we're not going to lie to people and be like, yeah, we're not going to tell some running back that you're going to get 20 carries a game. That's not what we do. I'm not going to change what we're doing. So I think part of it is knowing who he is, knowing what he was. Like, again, he didn't win national championships, but 8 wins, go to a bowl game, 6-7 wins, go to a bowl game. Like, he won enough to make himself viable, and he won enough to make himself important on the landscape, and then this stuff, these clips that we're playing, endeared him to everybody. So there wasn't somebody going, hey, this guy's full of baloney. This guy, like, it's hard to attack the guy when he's talking about pirate swords, even after a loss. Like, you can be like, what went wrong here? But you never got him to be a different person. So again, Connor O'Gara is set to join us coming up to talk more about that. But just refreshing clips. These were fun. But again, reminding that he was still a brilliant, brilliant football coach. But as I said earlier, and I think Connor will elaborate it on a little more, sure, there are people who wondered, would it work? Would it be that way in an SEC environment? Sure, it could work in the Pac-12, but could it really work in the SEC? Connor O'Gara, Saturday Down South, joins us next. We continue on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. We continue with Wake Up Call. We'll be right back.
alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we've been spending this morning talking about the life legacy of Mike Leach, who passed away again Monday night in Mississippi. 3 years at Mississippi State, long career in Pullman, long career in Lubbock as Texas Tech and Washington State's head coach, but had a team in the SEC. And when we talk SEC football, Connor O'Gara is our guy. Saturday down south on a Progressive guest line, Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Visit them for a quote at progressive.com. How are you, Connor?
I'm doing well. You know, it's been a pretty heavy week, but seeing kind of the outpouring of stories with Mike Leach, you know, it just kind of puts a smile on your face, and it's great that we can honor someone like this who has meant so much to this sport over the course of the last 25 years.
Yeah, I was going to start with that. I mean, obviously with Mississippi, people in Starkville didn't have as long with him as Lubbock or Pullman, but they certainly had enough to know his impact around college football from what he implemented. We've been talking this morning about his legacy as a personality, but let's talk about him as a football coach and where his tentacles have reached in this sport.
It's everywhere, man. I mean, look at the Heisman ceremony. Bruce Feldman tweeted out, there's like four guys in the Heisman ceremony who have offenses that are, you know, that are using air raid principles. And this basic notion at the time when he and Hal Mumme are coming up and they're coming from Valdosta State and they're going to Kentucky. You know, I was talking to Tim Couch yesterday about this and how, you know, they show up and he's like, oh, this is great. This is incredible. Like, this offense is weird. It's out of nowhere. It's wild, but I'm going to get to throw the ball 50 times a game. You're telling me it's all about spacing. I only got to learn 10 to 15 plays. Like, this revolutionary concept that, yeah, we don't see teams that are throwing the ball 50 times a game at the Power 5 level right now, but this belief that spacing can be done so much differently and we can rely on the passing game in a different way. And it doesn't have to just be about the play action pass or something like that. It just was so revolutionary. And Leach, you know, doing what he did at three different programs for two decades is incredible. And three different programs that, by the way, I don't think anybody would call them historically successful. And that, to me, is what his legacy deserves to be, is being a guy that was authentically himself. Because if he wasn't, there's no way that we would be talking about him in this way.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, is that not only does he come up with this sort of offense, but he has this incredible personality. We just played the clip of you asking about Netflix. What was that about him that sort of opened up reporters to say, let's explore other things with this guy other than the X's and O's of what he was doing?
Think about how many football coaches you could legitimately ask that question to. Like, if you ask Nick Saban a question about something like that, you're getting a snarl and like, all right, we need to take ourselves more seriously. We need to hold ourselves to a higher standard. Leach never took himself too seriously. And that's so refreshing in a sport that kind of beats it out of you. You know, like, there are so many different places where if you go and you come up with answers like that, it's kind of like, oh gosh, this guy doesn't want to talk about football. He doesn't care about football. And he gets criticized for that. And instead with Leach, we embraced it because we obviously knew that his football acumen was off the charts. And this guy was doing things that, you know, very few people at the time were doing in the early part of the 21st century. And that kind of spoke for itself. And it opened up for his personality to come out. And you see all these different Leachisms talking about, you know, swinging your sword. And, you know, he loved Geronimo. And he loved talking about all the little intricacies of life in itself. And he could give you a take on marriage, how to properly eat a sandwich, why coffee was disgusting and we should just drink it anyways. Like, there are so few guys who are willing to let their personalities truly come out. And, you know, from a media standpoint, you love seeing that. You love seeing somebody that's willing to kind of go in a different direction, because we got plenty of time for the other stuff. All right. Like, we got plenty of time to figure out, you know, whether or not your middle linebacker is going to be making that next step this year, whether you feel good about your left tackle spot. And Leach was sort of a breath of fresh air. And yeah, sometimes he said things that offended people. And, you know, I didn't think that he always chose his words correctly, but, you know, you still take what he gave to the sport, and he gave so much entertainment both on and off the field. And it's going to be hard to ever find anyone that can do all those different things in the way that Leach did.
How much of his non-football background shaped the way he saw the game and the way he coached the game and the way he talked about the game? I mean, this is not a guy that grew up through the normal path to being a football coach. He wasn't a player. He was a rugby player. He went to law school. He didn't jump into the, you know, jump right in, you know, right away. How much of that played into the way he said, why complicate something that doesn't need to be as complicated as people are making it?
Yeah, that was one of the things I asked Tim Couch about was, this guy that comes in with a law degree who never played college football, were guys skeptical of that because, you know, it's very out of the ordinary. You don't typically see that. And he's like, yeah, I mean, it took a little bit, but then you kind of realize like how smart he was and how these concepts just worked, and they worked in such an efficient way. And that's sort of what it was able to allow him to kind of buck that trend, and what allowed him to overcome that lack of experience on the gridiron was, yeah, he wasn't necessarily coming out there pretending like he was Deion Sanders, but you know, that also probably allowed his approach to work, and why he had so much confidence and trust in it was because he was like, look, I've studied this game. I watched it from a different vantage point when I was in college, and I have these rugby concepts that I like to implement as well. But why this can work is because I've seen this from a different angle, and we've had this perspective that very few have. And why this was able to stand the test of time is because the dimensions on a football field don't change. And the rules probably only helped a passing approach the way that Leach had. And so this approach that, yes, has had minor tweaks here and there, has been able to work over the course of the last two decades because of Leach's background and because he was so willing to say, like, look, this is what I know. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like this is, you know, revolutionary smash mouth football. And he didn't have to. And it was kind of refreshing to see somebody so willing to stick to something that was so unique at the time.
And no matter who comes in, I mean, unless you're like on a Nick Saban level, there's always people that are going to say, well, that's not going to work here, or that might not work here. Was that voice loud in Starkville, or was it rather quiet when he arrived there?
Well, in Starkville, yeah, I mean, for sure. And you've got people saying like, oh, this will never work in the SEC. And it's like, well, it worked at Kentucky,
right,
you know, way back in the day. Like, how quickly we forget. But I think that first game against LSU where Bo Pelini is out here trying to do all this man coverage and, you know, his entire secondary with All-Americans on it is just in shambles. You watch that first game back in the 2020 season when KJ Costello looked like a Heisman contender and he set an SEC record for passing. And you're like, oh man, this will work. And if you don't prepare for it properly, yes, you will absolutely get shredded by this. And yeah, it had its shortcomings. And he wasn't, in my opinion, going to beat an Alabama. He wasn't going to beat a Georgia, these sure tackling teams. But at the same time, think about the floor that he elevated in the stat that I brought up on Twitter earlier. Going into places like Texas Tech, Washington State, Mississippi State, having an 8-win season 13 times, it's absurd. You're not supposed to succeed at that level at places like that who aren't going to win a national championship. That's just reality. But he elevated the floor, and he elevated the floor because of the style that he played.
It's really fascinating because the more I was reading about it and looking at him, it's you know, I live in Nashville, and all of us, we got this Tennessee team that's putting up 47 points per game, and you're looking at it and you're like, all right, here's Josh Heupel. And then you go, oh, here's, it's like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. There's a connection to Mike Leach in almost any of these sort of offenses that you can go to Patrick Mahomes, you can go to the NFL, you can see in some way, shape, or form a connection to Mike Leach.
It's so unique. And, you know, at the time when Tim Couch is setting all these records at Kentucky, he's like, yeah, we had no idea that this was going to become as popular as it is. But, yeah, you see these principles all over the place. And now, you know, it gets lumped in with the Baylor principles. And even you see the Baylor principles at a place like Arkansas and Ole Miss, where these run-heavy places that still operate under similar concepts, and being able to run tempo and to be able to make these decisions at the line of scrimmage. You know, I was watching there's a 60 Minutes piece that they did on Texas Tech back in like 2008, and you're watching Graham Harrell do this breakdown. It's a 3-minute breakdown that he does of something that he processes in 2 seconds in the air raid offense. So yeah, while it was 10 to 15 plays, the ability to figure out all those different things at the line of scrimmage, all these different things within the route tree, is to me what makes it so unique and why it's been able to stand the test of time.
It's easy to see now in his passing all of the tributes and everybody saying all the nice things. Was he a well-liked coach in the SEC when he was doing his thing in Starkville?
Yeah, I think he was, because I think even if you are one of those people that's like, hey, I'm not crazy about a guy coming out here and saying that players are lazy and they just want to sit under a shade tree and eat a fish sandwich and drink a lemonade with their fat little girlfriends. Even if you weren't necessarily a fan of somebody saying that, which I'll be honest, like I didn't think that he's in position to say something like that.
Yeah.
I think you've got to be a little bit more understanding of kind of your surroundings. But at the same time, he was absolutely well-liked. And I think people respect those who are able to build a foundation on their own beliefs and their own you know, their own system and their own style. And that's what Leach did. And I think that even for the most respected coaches in this field, a Nick Saban, a Kirby Smart, these teams that, I mean, quite honestly, like, took Mississippi State to the woodshed. Let's call it what it is. Like, I think even those coaches look at what he did and they say, man, like, that guy was unapologetically himself and was able to succeed with his brand of football. And you see the Lane Kiffin tributes, and you see everybody in the SEC coming out and everybody across college football talking about the impact that Leach had on their lives. And it's not easy to be a Power 5 head coach for two decades, and Leach was able to accomplish that and impress a lot of people along the way.
I'm still fascinated by the stories of people who talk about the way they were recruited by him and sort of a side story of doing this or a magic trick or things like that. But when it came to actually discussing football, how did he present himself when he would talk about the X's and O's of a game or a situation in a game? Was it simplistic, or did you see a little genius in how he would explain that?
I think there was a lot of genius. You know, I've talked to people that have been in the film room with him, and he could be blunt. And he could kind of let you know when you were making a mistake and when it was something that was, you know, totally all over the place. But he also kept it very light. And he wasn't, I don't think it was fair to call him this disciplinarian, as blunt as he was. But at the same time, like, I think there was an understanding that he had the respect of everybody on both sides of the ball and the way that he talked about the game. And, you know, I was talking to Errol Thompson about this, who was Mississippi State's captain during Leach's first season at Mississippi State. And he's like, you know, they wanted to cut our throat out. I mean, they wanted to attack our defense, and he wanted to make sure that we were taking every possible precaution to be able to improve against his offense. And, you know, kind of seeing some of his methods, I don't think that we're going to see coaches doing some of the things that he did 20 years from now. You know, he talked about, like, one time in practice, they sent the entire offensive line to what they called Leach Beach, which was a sand pit. And he had this entire offensive line of Mississippi State rolling around in the sand in full pads, and then just go back to practice because he thought they were being lazy. Like, not every coach can get away with that, but when you've had the levels of success that Leach has had, you know, there is a certain level of tolerance that players have, and they understand that, okay, there's a method to his madness, and it absolutely was madness.
Absolutely. Great stuff, and we love having you on for this kind of thing. Thank you for always being available for us. Appreciate it, my man.
Absolutely. Anytime, man.
You got it. Connor O'Gara on the, again, Mississippi State, Mike Leach. Not only, and I don't want to sugarcoat this, but I mean, he really was as Connor pointed out, his reach in this sport was incredible, but the length of time at Texas Tech, there are going to be people, it was a near decade at Texas Tech. It was a decade at Texas Tech from 2000 to 2009, and it was almost a decade at Washington State. It was 3 years at Mississippi State, but he's right. Everywhere he went, he was finding a level of success and racking up 158 wins. Yeah, some of the seasons were down, but most of them, you're finding 8-9 wins on the board from the moment he got in Lubbock all the way through to Pullman and then later on in Starkville. All right, it's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, like we mentioned earlier, bowl season starts this weekend. And oh, by the way, Ron, three NFL games on Saturday. Now that college football is kind of like done with that day a little bit.
Love
the NFL
Saturday
goes,
games.
Yeah, we're gonna have, I love Saturday games. I love Saturday night games. We got Buffalo against Miami on Saturday night. I love Saturday night games.
And isn't there supposed to be like a half a foot of snow?
I think so. They said bring your warm and snow weather. Yeah, up to Buffalo this weekend. No, Saturday night games are the best because it's like Pac-12 after dark, but like with NFL teams, and you don't have to, you know, get up. We don't have to get up early for this show the next day. Every Sunday night game, I'm always looking at the clock going, well, if this goes into overtime, I'm only going to get about 6 hours of sleep. But Sunday night, NFL Saturdays are great. Love them. Absolutely love them. So Buffalo and Miami, big game in Buffalo. I mean, last time they played, this is so great of the NFL to give us these two teams, and when they give you them on the schedule, are in two wild weather situations. Remember when they played in Miami in week three or something? It was like 1,000 degrees. The Bills were not in the shade. There was like heat exhaustion, and they lost. they lost a close-fought game. And now these two teams are heading to Buffalo in mid-December, and there's talking about snow coming pouring in off the lake and coming in on Saturday for this contest. So, yep, this should be a really, really fun one. So there you got three games on Saturday and then Sunday, and then Monday night, Green Bay against the Rams, two teams with losing records. So it's not, I'm sure, what Joe Buck and Troy Aikman thought of when it was looked at their schedule at the beginning of the season. They probably thought, hey, Troy, late December, mid-December, we'll go to Lambeau, Super Bowl champions against the Packers. That should be a good one. And little did they know that both teams were going to be, was going to be Baker Mayfield against an Aaron Rodgers that doesn't seem to want to be playing this year. So, nevertheless. But I'm really looking forward to Saturday evening in the National Football League. So thanks to Connor O'Gara. He's very good. Where did we find him? He's been great for us for years and years. Tim Couch, big beneficiary of Mike Leach's offense back in the 90s when he was the OC at Kentucky under Hal Mumme. Number one overall pick by the expansion Cleveland Browns. So, all right, again on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. We'll see coming up as we continue with Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.